Welcome to the Delta Flyers journey through the wormhole with Quark, Dax, and their good friends, Tom and Harry. Join us as we make our way through episodes of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Your hosts for today are my fellow Trek actors, Armin Shimerman, Garrett Wong, and myself, Robert Duncan McNeil.
For the complete and super cool version of this podcast, check out patreon.com/the Delta Flyers and sign up to become a patron today and check out all the bonus material that we have.
I have to compliment Garrett on his Hawaiian dance that he did.
Oh, did you like that? The Delta Flyers journey through the wormhole.
Yeah. It's the secret club.
It's a secret club handshake with all of our Patreon patrons is what it is. So
exactly. Yeah.
Very funny.
Armin, how are you? You're headed off for a holiday soon.
Yes, in 6 days from now, I will be headed towards Greece, where we'll spend 12 days on a ship visiting all the Greek islands and all the archaeological sites. Places that I've read about for all my life. I'm looking forward to actually stepping on the stones that ancient Greeks stood on as well.
Yeah, it's so exciting. I've never been to Greece. I would love to go as well.
It's something we've always wanted to do. When I was in high school, the only place I wanted to go to Greece, and now, 50, 60 years later, I'm finally going.
Good for you guys.
Per our conversation before, I learned of this trip quite a while ago. I did mention to Armin, I said, I'm coming. I'm gonna buy my own passage. And of course, my schedule does not permit that, but I wish I could be there as well.
I wish you could, but there's a part of me that says I'm glad Garrett's not coming.
Have a nice romantic trip with Kitty and Garrett.
Exactly.
The third wheel, Garrett. Armin, Kitty, can I sit here and eat with you, please? Yeah, they're like, we have a
Can
romantic-
I sit between you? Is that okay?
Can I sit between you two on your anniversary dinner, please?
Very funny.
We have a couple birthdays to go through right now. So first of all, we want to say happy birthday to Izzy Jaffer on December 22nd. Happy birthday, Izzy.
Happy birthday, Izzy.
Happy birthday, Izzy. You share a birthday with Lisa Hill, who is also on December 22nd. Happy birthday, Lisa.
Happy birthday, Lisa.
Happy birthday, Lisa Hill.
Nice, Garrett.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, it's time for poetry synopsis.
Yes.
Of this episode, The Abandoned. The Abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
Robbie, limerick, please.
Here we go with our limerick for The Abandoned. Quark finds a baby who's not who we thought. He's a Jem'Hadar who's grown up in a shot. Odo tries an adoption to give the boy another option, but watch out when you play Jake in Dom Jot.
Very good.
Here's my haiku. Brash yields an infant. Rapid growth. He's Jem'Hadar. Odo can't control. All right.
Nice.
Thank you.
Abandoned. That's the word I focused on. Mm-hmm. It's from the old French. Abandonné. Abandonné. I think I'm mispronouncing that, but that's what my dictionary says.
Yeah.
There are several definitions for abandoned. The first is to leave to anyone's mercy or discretion. I think that's appropriate for this episode.
Yeah.
Two, to substitute absolutely. I don't understand that definition, but that's what the dictionary said. Three, to give up absolutely, to give up the control or discretion of another. That's certainly pertinent for this episode.
Yes, yes.
Four, to give oneself up without resistance, to yield oneself unrestrained. I don't think that applies here, but maybe it does. Five, to sacrifice, devote, or surrender. In the B story, I think it applies there, to sacrifice, devote, or surrender. And six, to give oneself up without resistance as the mastery of a passion or understanding or unreasoning impulse, which I think does apply to Odo, if anyone. Yeah.
Yeah.
This word, as far as I can tell, was first used in English around 1386.
1386. Wow. I was not around then. I am old, but not that old.
I was there. I originated this word. But
oh.
No applause, please.
We have guest stars.
Yes.
We have Bumper Robinson as the teenage Jem'Hadar. Well, I saw the name and I thought, what? Is this the same actor? And it is. This is the actor who played Zamis in one of my favorite cult sci-fi films, Enemy Mine. He plays
Oh.
the young child of Willis Gossett Jr.'s, because Willis Gossett Jr. plays the main alien, and then he has
yeah.
a child, and the child is played by Bumper Robinson in 1985. It's a 1985 film, and that movie is going to be remade by none other than our PA turned showrunner.
Oh,
Oh,
really?
really?
Terry's remaking it?
Terry Metalis has that gig. So,
wow.
So
maybe
I actually, I
Bumper
think.
Robinson should be in it.
He should. I actually texted him and I said, listen, this has been one of my favorite cult sci-fi films of all
that would
time.
Be great if
I
you were
said,
in
could
it.
you please just cast me as a rock on the planet? I'm fine. I'll play an inanimate object. I don't care. I don't have to have any lines. I just want to be in this goddamn film. I mean, I love that movie. So very excited that, this may,
That's very
yeah, this
cool.
may be, yeah,
Very cool.
hopefully it doesn't get passed off. You know how Hollywood can, you know, someone can be attached to something and then they
Oh, yeah.
switch it up or whatever. So hopefully Terry stays on for the entire time. That would be amazing. We also have Jill Sayre as Marta.
Finally, we meet Marta.
Yeah.
The famous
Well,
Marta that Jake's talked about.
Okay, guys, when we see Marta sitting next to Jake, honestly, to me, she looks 10 years or 15 years older than him. All
Easily.
right?
Yeah.
Easily. But in reality, in real life, we're talking about not much at all.
Six
Really?
or eight years,
Yes.
yeah.
No, less, Robbie.
Really?
Siroc Lofton is born August 7th, 1978. Miss Jill Sayre is born January 6th, 1976. There's 2.5 years difference between the two.
Wow.
Very hard to believe because she
That
looks
is
like a
crazy.
mature woman. Am I right, Armin? Come on.
Yes, absolutely. But I wouldn't trust your reference places.
Oh, yeah, that's true, maybe.
Or that the actress gave the correct age.
Yeah, that's true.
I
Don't
just
trust
would
the internet,
find that a little
people.
hard to believe. Although,
did anyone of our listeners out there grow up with Jill Sayre, please comment. I'd like to know what year she graduated high school. Yes.
I'm on Team Cisco with that issue. Like, she is far too
Oh
old
my
and
gosh.
worldly for
Yeah.
young Jake.
Yeah. Robbie, like, if your son, either of your sons came home with a woman that looked that much older than
Yes.
he was, you would have taken some, you know,
Yes, I
precautions,
would
or
have.
you would have
That would
said,
have been
hey.
hard to manage because,
Yes.
just like for Cisco, like, how do you talk your kid out of feelings they're having? But yeah, it's tricky.
Oh
I'm
my
going to take
goodness.
A cue from this episode and ask this question.
Yeah.
Yes.
Why? Why do you feel uncomfortable with that?
I think that Jake, to me, they say he's 16 in this episode, but he looks younger than that to me. He seems younger than that.
I don't think he's younger than 16. I think Siroc is probably about that age at this episode.
About that age at this time. But I think that at that point in a kid, whether it's a boy or a girl, teenager, there's so much change happening developmentally and these experiences that to throw in a much older, and maybe in real life she wasn't much older, but in the story she seemed easily 10 years, if not more, older. And also, like, her experience seems challenging.
Well, it's the preconceptions of what we think about certain
Yeah.
things.
That's
I
right.
think that is indicative of this entire episode. That's
That
why
is
I
right.
asked the question.
That is right.
I guess here's the thing I'll say about it. I noticed, and we'll get into it in the first scene. I noticed in Quarks, and this is not a shot at Quarks at all, but I noticed there's often a real hypersexualization of the way that people interact with each other, that Marta interacts in that first scene with the gambler has an element of sexual manipulation or, and in that sense, I would not want someone skilled in those ways to be dating my young, innocent first relationship son. That doesn't seem like the right combo to me.
Okay.
Now, you understand from my studies of Elizabethan times,
Yes.
it's not unusual for people to get married at 12 and 14.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. I guess it's more cultural.
It is cultural. Yeah, that's exactly. I think that's what this episode is talking about, cultural prejudices.
Yeah,
For
absolutely.
sure. For sure. Next up, we have Leslie Bevis, who plays Rionage or Rianoche. Rianoche is a character that appears not only in the second season, but the third and the fourth season of DS9. So this is a recurring alien character played by Leslie Bevis.
And Leslie was in the scene where she was kissing your lobe, right?
Yes.
We have Matthew Kimbrough as the alien high roller.
That's the first scene.
And if I may take a moment,
Yeah.
I talked about Joe Ruskin in the last time I was with you guys,
Yeah.
who was a major union official. So is Matt Kimbrough.
Oh.
Really? Matt Kimbrough is, originally he was one of the leaders in the AFTRA union, and then when we became
Oh.
SAG-AFTRA, he is still a leader in the new amalgamated union, and he
Oh.
sits on the pension and health fund for the AFTRA pension fund,
Okay.
and a very nice man, and has given his life to union politics.
Oh,
Whoa.
wow.
Well, thank you, Matthew.
Yes, absolutely. He was great. He was a lot of fun in that first scene.
He is a lot of
I,
fun.
yeah.
Yeah. We also have Hassan Nicholas as Jem'Hadar Boy. I'm assuming this is the
The baby.
second, no, not the baby, but the second incarnation,
Oh,
right?
yes,
Because there's
probably.
baby, then second, then sort of the
Then 10 year
12-year-old,
old or
and then the
something. Yeah.
18-year-old,
And
right?
then, the Jem'Hadar stops growing.
Then
I
he
know. I
stops.
noticed that too.
Yeah. He's
He
finished.
suddenly stops at
He's
18 or
six,
whatever he
18.
is.
Yeah. But there's no credit for the little baby, though.
Oh.
So, yeah, I don't have anything for that.
And the baby had to get makeup on too.
Had a little bit of thing on the
Yeah.
forehead there.
Which they
Yeah.
had to be very careful about because
Yeah.
there are state and probably federal rules about what you can put on to babies. And as I understand it, they had to create something that was attached simply with KY jelly.
Right. That's
Wow.
correct. So in our episode, in our show, Armin, we had one baby who's part alien that had these little horn thingies, like a ridge of horns, and they attached it via KY jelly. But
Wow.
as shooting went on, as hot as it was, it started sliding down. It started moving away from the original placement. So now the horns are all askew and everything, and they have to fix it. So yeah, it's a lot of rules there in terms of what you
Yeah.
how you can deal with baby skin, which is the most
Yes.
tender of all types of skin, I suppose, most
Yes.
sensitive. Yeah, written by D. Thomas Mayo and Steve Warnick, and directed by none other than Avery Brooks.
Yeah. Felt very different. I just as a general comment, I'll say it
Yeah.
definitely felt like he was trying some new things and, shooting things a little different.
Can I read a little something about
Yeah.
Avery? Here we go. Director Avery Brooks saw this episode as something of a metaphorical study of racial tension and gang culture. According to Brooks, quote, "For me, it was very much a story about young brown men and, to some extent, a story about a society that is responsible for the creation of a generation of young men who are feared, who are addicted, who are potential killers." So he made the connection of the Jem'Hadar
Yeah,
with
I
South
can see
Central
that.
LA or any
Yeah.
gang culture in America or the world, I guess.
I can see
I
that.
assume they assign episodes to various directors. It may be that when Avery was notified of this script, although that would have to be way in advance, that he said, "I want to do this one for that very reason."
Yeah. Often when director assignments happen, they don't know what stories exactly are going to happen. So I don't know if
It's a slot that they get. Isn't that
yeah, when
right,
he
Robbie?
took
A
the
time
slot,
slot.
it was just a slot. But I bet you're right, Armin. The writers probably thought, all right, if we gave Avery episode five, whatever this is, let's look for something that's going to speak to him and let's talk to him. And, so they may have had stories they could have shot this later, but they decided to pull it up because this would be good for Avery or something. But yeah, typically those slots are given early in the season before those stories are even broken.
Yeah.
So it's a random draw sometimes of what you get.
I should tell everyone a little bit of Avery's background as a director. He was a professor at the University of Rutgers in New Jersey, and
That's
we're
great.
in the theater department where he taught directing.
Oh,
Not for the
wow.
camera, I don't
Yeah.
think. I'm not
For
sure,
theater, right?
but for
Directing for
theater.
theater.
Yeah.
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 Wow.
Okay. Here's another little tidbit, guys. The events of the Voyager pilot episode Caretaker take place between this episode and the next one. So it's between this one and the next one that Voyager actually.
That we go to your bar,
Yes, we go to
Armin.
Quark's and he tries to sell me lobi crystals and I
And
offend
the
him.
lobi crystals I found in the wreckage of this episode. That's what I
Ah,
found.
yes,
That totally
the
is
lobi
me. It's
crystals
all
were,
coming
yeah, it's
together
all
now. It's
coming
all, yeah.
together and I get saved by good old Robbie
What
McNeil. Tom Paris saves
do
me.
you mean
Okay.
saved? What do you mean
Oh,
saved?
nothing. He comes and grabs me to take me to Voyager. That's what he didn't save me.
I see.
He escorts me to Voyager. How's that?
Just like I'm a disease. I'm saved from Quark.
No. All right, let's jump into it.
The first scene's in Quark's. I think it starts with this overhead shot, which I thought was very
I
interesting.
liked it
I
actually.
think
Different.
Rom or someone was
That's not Rom. It's Broik. It's David Levinson.
Broik. Okay.
He's delivering drinks, and we see him drop one off, and then it pans all the way around to see Quark leaning over the rail and then tilts down to see the winnings of the table. So it was a really ambitious lighting setup. That was a almost a full 360 around.
Right. I mean, you have to light two different levels. You have to light the upper level and you have to light the lower level.
Very ambitious opening shot, but something I hadn't ever seen before. So I thought that was cool. Quark is not happy leaning over that rail about the winnings, the shouting of Dabo down below.
To this day, I'm not sure if Dabo means I won or I lost. I'm not sure.
They seem happy about it.
I
Right.
suppose.
In Hawaiian culture, aloha is hello, aloha is goodbye. So you could be win lose, Dabo, same way, however you pronounce it.
Well, she says something later on. She says, Karjinko,
Yeah, that's
sorry.
the first time we've heard that. I'm like,
I know.
Karjinko? What? Which sounds like pachinko, which is a game
Pachinko, yes.
in Japan.
Yeah.
But I will say, yes, Quark is not happy, but
No.
Armin is happy that Matt Kimbrough is working that day. So
Yes,
there's a
that's
difference,
right.
yeah.
So let's talk about Marta. Marta is the dealer, I guess. I wrote Jake's girlfriend? Question mark, question mark, question mark.
Oh
Oh
my
my,
goodness.
does not
Yes.
look like who I would picture Jake's girlfriend to be.
Oh.
Yeah, they definitely dressed her more maturely than a 16-year-old.
She looks so much older than
So
Jake.
much older.
Oh,
And
yeah.
she's talking to the gambler. We learn his name is Okalar. He wants to leave. He's won a bunch of money. He wants to leave. She goes, "Well, you're on a you got a good lucky streak going. Why would you leave?" Convinces him to stay, roll one more time, and of course he loses. She heads over to talk to Jake. I wrote down, "How can he be in a bar? Like, isn't he a 16-year-old? Is Quark's a restaurant or a bar or both? What is it,
Both.
Armin?
Both.
Both?"
Yeah, he's been there
So
before.
has he been in there
I
before?
think he has. I
He
think he
has.
has, yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's the tone.
It's meant to be our Vegas, is what it's meant to be.
Well, she goes over to him and she's very excited for dinner with him and his dad. And Jake is taken by surprise, seems a little thrown. But he does say, "Oh yeah, that was my idea." He kind of plays along with it, but you can tell he was thrown.
Guys, I kept thinking when she walked over, I said, "This is not Marta. There's going to be another woman that comes in, a younger
Nope.
girl. There's going to be someone that's more age appropriate that's going to pop in that's friends with this
So we're all on
Dabo
Team
girl."
Cisco.
We
We're on
are.
Team. Yeah.
We don't.
Well,
We're
maybe
not.
not Armin. I can't tell with
Maybe
Armin.
not Armin.
Maybe not Armin. Okay.
If people like each other, it doesn't bother me what
It
phase
should
they
not
are.
be a
Unless
contract
it's
you're worried
really
about.
inappropriate. I mean, if it's a 60-year-old man and a 15-year-old girl,
Yeah,
that's
that's a
wrong.
little bit too much.
But this is, what are we talking about? We're talking about a handful of years, really. I know it's a maturation process. I understand what you guys are saying. But I think she answers it very cleverly and wisely in the dinner scene.
In the dinner scene, I agree with you. I agree with you. Well, they talk
She...
about dinner and then we cut over to Quark and Boslick, Leslie Bevis. No.
No. Wait a
She is
minute.
Riona. Riona.
She's Riona.
Well, why does it say Boslick here?
I know. In the script, it says Boslick. Well,
The IMDb page said Riona, so
yeah, it says Riona or Ryonage or whatever.
whatever.
So that's weird, Robbie.
I wonder if it was scripted for another alien with a random name. And then maybe the writers or someone said, "Oh, we use
Let's
this
bring
other
her
woman,
in.
bring her back." But they may not have ever changed the name in the script.
There's another possibility.
Yeah.
It was a ton of makeup that Leslie was wearing.
Yeah.
It happened on rare, rare occasions, but it did happen. When someone was put into that much makeup, they couldn't take it. And they quit on they before the day was out. And they get the stuff off me now. I'm not saying it did happen, but it is a scenario that could have happened.
But it's possible.
And then they said, well, let's bring Leslie. Leslie can has done this before, so.
Well, definitely, I just went back to the original script, and it is scripted as a character named Boslick. The very original script. So they definitely wrote it maybe not with her in mind, and
Could
she
you?
ended up getting it for however that happened.
What if you were to Google who played Boslick on DS9? What would pop up then? Would it say, oh, that was actually changed to Ryonoj, or does it a whole nother name come up?
No,
No.
Boslick is listed as an alternate name. Maybe it's an alternate name, Ryona Boslick. Oh, Boslick is the kind of alien. Here we go. Boslick is the species of alien.
Well, there
Okay,
you go.
that
That
explains it
explains
to
it.
me. Yes. Okay. Whoo. Whoo, that
Still
was
weird
a.
that they wouldn't put Riona on there. You know, just
Yeah.
put Riona on there. Why are you okay?
Yeah,
Boslick is the type of
it's like
alien.
just putting a Vulcan in for the character name. But the
Still
Vulcan would
weird
have,
though. Yeah, doesn't make sense.
Well, anyway, Boslick, Riona Boslick, Riona the Boslick talks to
RTB.
Quark. Yes, talks to Quark about some junk. She's got some salvage. She's also super seductive. I felt so much sexual tension in this opening scene. That's why I wasn't comfortable with Jake being there. He's just oozing sex in there. Anyway, she's very seductive, wants some to sell some salvage to Quark. He tries to resist, but then she kisses your lobe, and we know.
It's as I watched that scene, I thought, oh yeah, this is one of those instances where I'm probably not, I have no idea what she's doing to me, and therefore I don't react until the kiss.
She does touch your lobe slightly, very lightly, but you didn't know she was doing that, and
But
it's like
I probably saw her hand, but I probably didn't know where it was going. So, you know, this is the problems with not being able to feel through the rubber.
I'm just wondering what's the way around that? Could the director have said, like, she's touching your lobe, like just yelled that out and just so you would have known that? I don't know
I
how
could have
to.
asked her, and I
What are
probably,
your actions gonna before yeah
yeah.
beforehand?
But
What are you,
I can see as she's doing that, and I'm looking at the pad. I can almost hear myself thinking, I don't know what she's doing up there. So
That's
is she
funny.
patting the top of my head? Is she
I
touching
mean,
the? You have no
especially the
clue.
ridge. The ridge over the eyes is
What is
so
that?
much
6 inches?
rubber.
Well, how much rubber is that? That's foam.
I would say about 3 inches of 4 inches
At
of foam.
least. Oh my God.
Next scene, we go to the cargo bay and he walks in. He obviously has bought this junk
Three
because
bars of
he's,
latinum. That's all it cost. And
three bars of latinum. He got
got a
all
lot
this
of
junk.
stuff. It's like that program where the people stand there and they auction off the storage units, and you don't know what's inside there. You
Yes,
just have to bid
exactly.
on it, right? And you get a cursory look real quick, and that's it. You can't rummage through everything. So, yeah, you won the bid there on that one.
Well, he does say three bars of latinum. He's looking around. I love this turn, Armin, when you go three bars of latinum, like you're pissed off about it. And then you remember, yeah, it was worth
It's
it.
worth it.
I love that. I love it. But there's baby sounds we hear. He goes and opens a pod that looks like a, I don't know, it reminded me of like Alien, the movie, like the eggs opening or
The way it
something.
opened, yeah.
Or the worm in Dune.
Or the
Or the
worm.
worm,
Yes,
the worm
that's
in Dune.
exactly it.
But
Exactly.
there's steam or there's smoke coming out
I
of
thought the
the
baby was on
there's always
fire.
smoke. No,
There's always smoke.
I
No, it doesn't have
just.
to be fire. It can be dry ice. It doesn't have to be fire.
Yeah.
That's true.
And it probably was dry ice.
My estimation, I thought it was gaseous anomaly being expelled from there. So
That's what
it's Jem
Jem
Hadar
Hadar
infant
babies.
farts is what it
Yes.
was.
Yeah. That's what they look like. Those Jem Hadar, they're dangerous
They're
in
very
many different
many
ways.
ways, many ways.
As an infant, they have toxic gaseous anomaly coming out. There
Yeah.
you go.
But he
All right.
opens this thing. We hear the baby. We don't see it yet, though. We just see Quark's reaction. where he says, no. So,
Yeah,
love that.
no. Well, we don't
Love.
know. When you said that, honest, when your character says that, Armin, I'm thinking, is it deformed? Like, what's going on? I wasn't sure exactly what it was. Or just having the, maybe it's just you having the responsibility of
That's
dealing
what
with
I
this
got.
child is what it
I
was.
don't
Well,
want
I
a
think I had
baby.
read the next scene that I was in and went, oh, yeah, this is going to be a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in the next scene, we go in the infirmary, and there's a tiny little baby with some prosthetic on
Decal
its
with a
head.
decal, yeah,
Yeah, with a decal on its
with a bu
forehead.
the bumper sticker on his forehead,
Yeah.
yeah,
Sisko is very mad, though. He
yeah.
storms in. You bought a child? He's very, very mad at Quark. Quark defends himself. I just bought some junk.
Yeah.
Didn't know that the baby was there. Bashir doesn't recognize the species, though.
If I may, it's very slight, but a slightly racial prejudice coming from Sisko. Isn't there a rule of acquisition against this, you know? But the way he said rule of acquisition is though, you know, doesn't your culture have
Yeah.
something about this?
Uh,
And I think I defend that. Yes, there is, and this doesn't usually happen. And I
Yep.
don't buy things on sight unseen. Yeah.
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 Yeah, he was really mad at the top of
Yeah.
the
And you
scene.
don't want to be in front of Avery when he's really mad.
No. No. But I think that his level of anger or shock about this or outrage contrasted nicely with where he ends up at the end of the scene when he's
That's
holding
right.
the baby
That's
and
right.
suddenly he's made a turn. Oh, I didn't expect to feel this. This is this tenderness.
Avery is very good with children. He is incredible. He's the father of two, as far as I remember, and his attention to Serac over all those years was
Yeah.
extraordinary.
Yeah. Yeah, you can feel it in this scene with the real infant baby. You can feel that kind of fatherly instinct and that tenderness from him for sure. But Sisko wants to analyze this junk, find out where the baby came from. Quark reluctantly gives him all the junk he just paid for, which I thought was a nice. It was painful for you to do, Armin, but
I paid good money for that wreckage, and now it's yours. Enjoy.
exactly. Dax suggests that maybe they should look into the orphanage on Bajor, that they could take care of this baby. But when Sisko holds the baby, he clearly has this tenderness, this warmth for children in real life and in the show. And it's nice to sort of see him with this baby and that fatherly side of him when his B story or this other story with Marta and Jake is also about being a father and issues like that.
If we remember what Garrick told us about what Avery thought about this episode, that tenderness is not only real, but a choice as well,
Yeah.
because he wants to show that, you know, we don't know what babies are going to grow up to be, and we should
Yeah.
treat all people as though they're babies.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other thing, the orphanage thing. Now, I mean, of course, when we first watched this episode, Dax says we should contact one of the orphanages on Bajor. And I thought, that's a great idea. That's really good. But then after you see the entire episode and realize what the baby is, that's a very bad
That's
idea.
right.
Very bad
Yes.
idea.
Thank
No.
God they didn't
No.
send the baby down there.
No. Right.
Yeah. We go to the promenade on the upper level next. Dax and Sisko are walking. They walk and talk basically about how much Sisko misses when Jake was a baby.
Right.
So it kind of echoes that last moments of the last scene where
And
he.
ties the A story and the B story together.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. Exactly. And then Sisko goes back to his quarters. There's Jake lying on the couch working on a pad. Jake is mad at his dad, though, when Sisko comes in. Hey, how about a hug for the old man? And Jake just turns away from him.
Yeah, abruptly.
Yes. Yeah, he's mad about this whole dinner thing, you know, mad that Sisko invited Marta without asking him. And Sisko says, I told you a few weeks ago that if you didn't invite her, I would. I didn't lie to you.
And isn't this part of the maturation process for all humans?
Yeah.
When t people become teenagers, they begin to divorce themselves from their parents. They begin to get angry at their parents. They begin to self-assert. This is Jake's maturation process, again, emulating or imitating or mirroring the maturation process that's happening to the Jem'Hadar.
Yeah, absolutely. Jake eventually kind of calms down a bit, and you see Jake saying, it's no big deal. It's just dinner. And Cisco's like, yeah, right. Just dinner. Right. They're both
All
pretending
right.
to be
I
very
love that little.
lighthearted about it, but
Yes.
it's
Yeah.
clearly still an issue.
It's very simple. It's a very simple dialogue. Just exactly right, all right. But it worked perfectly. I love that little interaction.
The awkward kind of walking on eggshells with both of them.
Yes.
We go back to the infirmary. Sisko goes to see the baby, who now suddenly is an adolescent boy, like 10 years old or something. They examine the kid. Bashir says biologically he's only 2 weeks old, but he looks like a 10-year-old or something. You know, he looks much older.
Oh my gosh.
And then the boy says, he wants food. I need food. So he's speaking already.
That's a shock. That's a shock.
Oh yeah.
He's two weeks old and he's speaking perfect English.
Perfect English, exactly. And he's got curiosity. He says, I want to learn about the station when they tell him he's on the station. Yeah, I want to learn about it. This kid is growing very quickly.
While we're in the infirmary, I want to give kudos to Sadiq Al-Fadil, or Alexander Siddig, depending on what name you want to use for him, for the incredible techno babble that he had to spout all through this episode.
Yeah, he
Oh,
did.
yeah.
The doctor role on Star Trek always ends up with a lot of techno babble.
In this episode, I would say an exponentially more. Yes.
Yeah, but of all the DS9 characters, it's the Doctor and it's Dax that have, I think, the most techno babble of
End up
all
with a
the
lot.
characters.
Yeah.
And only the bartenders have to get the liquid in the glass. That's
That's
you're,
right.
you got lucky, Armin.
I
You
got
didn't
lucky.
you'd have to regurgitate that techno babble.
No.
They're talking to this boy, 10 years old, 8, 9, 10, 12, whatever he is, whatever he looks like. They're talking to him, and then they move aside to have a private conversation where Bashir says he's been genetically engineered. Maybe he's some kind of experiment, but there's definitely something has been altered in his physiology to help create this, accelerated growth. And Sisko says, well, track his mental development too, because maybe he'll be able to tell us. Maybe as he grows, he'll just fill in the blanks here and tell us.
They still don't know that he's Jem'Hadar, right?
No,
No,
not
not
yet.
yet.
Not yet. Back in the cargo bay, Miles and Sisko are examining the junk. O'Brien's there. They're looking at the stasis chamber. They call it a stasis chamber, is what Miles says it feels like. But Miles says no information from the junk yet on where the ship came from or where this baby's from. And then Sisko brings up the replicators. Hey, can you take a look at my replicators in my quarters? And O'Brien immediately knows, oh yeah, it's the dinner with Marta tonight, which I thought was very funny.
So they're not only monitoring Quark and his conversations, but they're also monitoring Sisko and his
Yes,
conversations.
exactly. There's definitely gossip or something. Sisko says in the scene that, she's much too old for Jake. And he does say, I don't even want to like her, which I think is interesting. Like, he's not even open. He's like, I don't want to like her. He's convinced this is going to prove that she's wrong for Jake.
And for me, that line, I don't even want to like her, again, ties the A story and the B story together. Because people's immediate reaction to the growing Jem'Hadar is not that we want to find out more about this entity, this being, this humanoid, but rather, I don't even want to like that person. And there's a shot that Avery got when it's coming up soon, where Jem'Hadar is coming out of the infirmary and people are reacting to the sight of him. Just inexplicable, either terror or they're going to put up a fight.
Yeah, it was an interesting choice. That shot you're talking about, we'll get into it, but I thought Avery made an interesting choice to shoot it that way.
This is also the scene where we get the age difference on screen. It's 16 and 20. They're saying that she's 20, Marta's 20, and Jake is 16. There's only 4 years difference, but to our eye, it looks like there's a much bigger gap.
Well, it's funny, like Armin, you just mentioned, developmentally, Jake is going through those kind of separation motions. He's getting angry, he's separating and growing up from his father.
He's got hormones just like the Jem'Hadar does.
Yeah,
Right.
exactly. But he's beginning some of those steps of maturity. Whereas I think my issue isn't whether Marta's 4 years older or 14 years older. It's her experience. She's gone through a lot of other development things that Jake hasn't, even if she's only 4 years older.
Yeah.
It feels that way. It feels like, and she does talk about it later. She was an orphan. She was on her own.
So forced to mature faster because of love.
Yeah,
losing her parents.
That's the thing. It's not the chronological age to me. It's the, are these experiences going to benefit each other or not?
It's an excellent point, but we're also given information that Jake is not quite the ingenue that we think of him, that he's quite capable of some very adult ideas.
Yes.
Including writing, which will be a huge factor later on.
Right here, it's definitely the first time they talk about his ability to write poetry or anything. We don't hear about that beforehand. After Sisko leaves, I do love O'Brien's line. So beautiful. 16 years old and dating a Dabo girl. Godspeed, Jake. Like he's literally like, good on you.
Wow.
Have fun. Yeah. Wowzers. Yeah, I just...
And we remember that Keiko's away on Bajor somewhere.
That's right. We go to a corridor next. Kira's there carrying a very large kind of potted plant of some kind. Mm-hmm. Flowers or something like that. She rings the doorbell. Odo grumpily kind of opens the door, shuts it right behind him. You know, what's she here for? He assumes it's because everybody wants to see his quarters, so he reluctantly lets her inside.
Before he lets her in, did anyone catch the doors? I don't know how they got, but there's a crack in the door where the light is coming through.
Oh, really?
Oh, no.
And I'm going, didn't anyone see that?
you did.
Oh, I didn't. You did. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a big crack. It's about half a finger width, but light is coming through.
On the side or
no,
on
in
the
middle.
Top?
In the middle.
Oh, right in the middle. It didn't do a clean close. Okay.
Ours would bounce.
Ours would sort of bounce
a little. And
yeah.
But they're supposed to completely close. That's what they're supposed to do.
Right. Oh, well.
They are. They need O'Brien to come fix it.
They need somebody.
Somebody.
Yeah. I think O'Brien's the wrong union, but yeah, okay, O'Brien's fine.
Well, he reluctantly lets Kira inside, where we see there's not any traditional furniture or anything like that. There's just all these objects.
It's almost like a museum in a way, a very tight museum.
At first, I thought, oh, God, Odo's into some kinky stuff here.
That's what I thought.
Major Kira, have you seen my sex dungeon? And you're like, oh.
That's what I thought it was when I first saw it.
When you see the big thing in the middle, it looks like something you would, a torture device. Or an exercise thing.
It looks like something that would be pitched on television where you can order this exercise whole thing to come to your house. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was, but there's all kinds of objects around. There's, metal things and all kinds of things. Yeah.
Shapes.
Shapes and textures and finishes. Mm-hmm. And he's really excited because he says to Kira, now I can experiment with what it means to be a shapeshifter.
Which is a reference, everybody, to that episode where we see when he's on the home world, where if you recall, the female changeling told him, enjoy the arboretum, enjoy the garden, and try to take on all the shapes of everything in this garden.
Yeah,
and
kind so, of be one and, with everything.
Yeah,
see
so he sort of
the potential that you have as a changeling. Yeah.
So that I think influenced his decor, or how he designed and decorated this area to sort of match that garden that we saw in the home world. He does put the plant in what I did not know. That's the bucket he regenerates in.
Yeah,
right. So he did that as a way to show how much he cares about
this gift from her. Yeah,
well,
I'm gonna put it in my special.
There is something interesting going on between the two actors on screen. Going, whoa, that's very friendly indeed. Very friendly indeed.
Oh yeah.
Well, we've established this. Odo has a crush on Major Kira, so we've already seen that he likes her in that way. So.
But she obviously, when she's waiting outside the door with her plant, it's obvious that she's got great anticipation to see him.
Yes.
And I don't think it's just the curiosity about the room.
Yeah, but I feel like it's more as a friend, a deep, deep, caring, loving friend, as opposed to like...
Romance. It's romance.
No, I see romance one-sided, him to her, but not her to him. Yeah, I don't know. But that's just my take. So
It's felt inconsistent to me.
Okay.
So far in the series.
Right.
I've seen moments of them with a romance kind of vibe going. And I think the actors are the ones that sort of planted this idea in the writers' minds, if I'm not wrong, because we've seen some of those very tender, deeply connected moments between the two actors. But then in the next episode, or even within the same episode, sometimes they're just back to business and you don't feel that tracking as much.
But I also see she's not romantically interested in Odo because she has a romantic interest. She's dating Vedic Barayo. That's her man, you know?
Yeah.
So, and as much as we don't like that union and how we feel that the chemistry is not there, that's a fact.
Technically, she's still got a thing there. But they're polyamorous, Bajorans. I don't know.
Robbie.
Not a lot of people know that, but.
Really? I never saw that anywhere that they're poly, but if you're going to go.
It's just a thing that I think of.
Oh, okay.
When I look at Bajorans. Yeah. I don't know if anybody else thinks of it.
Oh.
Anyway, yeah, we learn he's not sleeping in his bucket anymore because he puts the plant in the bucket. And then we go back to the replomat. Bashir is filling Dax in on the boy and everything. Yeah. He's sure that this boy's genes have been altered. He's absolutely convinced. But he said there's a flaw, that this boy needs this enzyme, this isogenic enzyme, or he could die. And he's trying to replicate it. He's not having any luck. But he doesn't understand why they would genetically engineer this kid this way when there's such an obvious flaw.
Why would the flaw be engineered into this?
Engineered, yeah. Yeah,
and
so
this being,
doesn't make
yeah.
sense.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly he gets a call to the infirmary. And this is where we go into that shot, Armin, you were talking about, the point of view, which we'll learn the point of view is the boy's point of view. So a door right. opens from the infirmary. The point of right. view goes out. We see Sue Henley, our Captain Janeway
yeah.
stand-in was the very kinda, first
she's
one.
The first person to be shocked, and she
yeah.
steps back a little bit. That's Sue.
That's Sue, and Sue had a Janeway bun on in this
She
scene.
Did, but she wasn't wearing, here's the thing, she's wearing regular civvy clothes, but there's been multiple times that Sue Henley is in Janeway's command red in the background. I've caught...
Really?
Well, yes. You
well, because the costume fits.
I've caught it four times now recently. So she's
That's
there
funny.
Over and over again, sort of almost foreshadowing Janeway,
yeah.
a redheaded captain with a bun yeah. in her hair, basically.
Yeah.
yeah.
That was fun for us to see, Armin. That,
it was.
I like seeing
yeah.
Sue.
I understand.
But this point of view goes to Sue. It goes to another guy, like you said, Armin. The next person puts up their fists like they're going to fight.
It's instinct. It's instinctual reactions.
Yes.
Instinctual
yes.
reactions.
I just love for Armin. Armin's like, Sue, who? And then the two of us are like, right. Oh my God, it's Sue
Henley.
Sue Henley. Sue Henley sighting.
Well, that's why I'm very specific. It's not Rom, it's Broik.
Yes,
that's yes. right. That's right.
He was my stand-in, and I want to make sure he gets his credit.
Yes, David needs to be credited properly. So
right. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, this point of view swings around back and forth, even to Bashir, who tries to help this point of view. We don't know who the point of view is, but Bashir comes over and we see from behind kind of a punch. Bashir goes down. So whoever's point of view is, yeah, it's very violent.
And another flaw, the face comes up just for a nanosecond after Bashir's been knocked to the ground. I go, oh no, that's not Sid.
Really?
I mean, I understand that stunt people have to do that. That's their job, and the actors, for the most part, want that to happen. But I thought, why did they allow that his face to show? Because it's not Sid.
It's not
right.
Sid. I didn't catch it, but I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised.
I'm going to say we all agree that Armin's character has been physically accosted more than any other Deep Space Nine character.
But yes,
slowly coming up in second, it's a distant second, is Bashir. Bashir, yeah, literally, I mean, being knocked down here, you do remember the episode in the crossover where he is slapped, the bejesus is slapped out of him by Mirror Universe Odo.
Amazing. So,
That's right.
So it's happening. He's yeah, catching up to Quark now in terms of physical abuse.
A lot of physical violence in DS9. Yeah.
Clearly.
In the last episode of Deep Space Nine, the last episode of season seven, someone gets their nose broken.
In real life?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness. Please do not spoil it for us.
Oh, no. Don't
just
spoil
just
it.
Let
I
us
can't
know
wait.
When it comes. Oh my gosh.
Well, so finally, this violent point of view we see from behind running towards Odo, who's come out. And as he dives to tackle Odo, he goes right through the gooey goo,
mm-hmm,
and falls to the ground. And that's where we realize this young man is a Jem'Hadar. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dax says it.
But he also realizes that when he tackles Odo, that is a founder as well. I mean, I think that's when he was like, whoa, wait a minute. This is the people that we're sworn
to protect. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. So yeah, that stops his violence, his aggressive behavior at that point.
Yeah. And he's been programmed with all of this information, I guess.
It's all in there.
Wow. We go to the lovely ward room next. It's a briefing room type environment. I love this set.
This is
I'm
the
so
second
glad
time.
They added this.
Isn't
set.
This right? Yeah. The second episode we've seen the ward
second
room.
Second or third. Set? It's yeah, new this season.
Yeah. We'll spend a lot of time in that set.
Did you like that set?
I was rarely there. Unless I was serving champagne, I was rarely there.
Yeah. It's not off limits to Quark, but Quark definitely did not frequent there. So, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, we're in the ward room. Sisko informs everybody that the Starfleet wants this kid to be turned back over to them to be studied. It kind of splits into two teams. Kira and Dax think he's dangerous, and the sooner they get rid of him, the better. They're kind of on that side. Yeah, give him over to Starfleet. Odo wants him to stay here, though. So does Bashir. Bashir, those two think that he should stay, particularly Odo. Odo's very passionate about this, very personal. Sisko can see that, so he asks everybody to leave, mm-hmm, and then he and Sisko talk about it.
Right.
And Odo feels responsible for what the founders did to this boy's people. Mm-hmm. And he wants to make things right, try to make a difference here.
But he also has gone through it himself. He's been a specimen.
Yes.
He knows what it's like to be a specimen. Mm-hmm. And he wants to save the boy from that experience.
Yeah.
Right. Because he was in the Bajoran laboratory,
yeah,
correct? Being studied.
That's right.
Sisko listens to him and really hears him and kind of reluctantly agrees, but says, be careful.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll just tell Starfleet we need to run a few more tests here before we send him off to them. But Odo's very passionate. He's like, give me a chance to find out if he really is just a program killing machine, or if we can help him become something else. So Odo really, in a way, has those fatherly sort of, you know, the way that Sisko did earlier in earlier in this episode with the baby, and these instincts come out of Odo to try to help him, you know, to be a father to this kid.
And one of the nice things for me is that Odo traditionally is in favor of keeping the peace, of justice,
yeah,
of making sure that everything is just so on this station, thinking that he can govern this this force of nature, which is a mm-hmm, Jem'Hadar, mm-hmm, is antithetical really to what Odo in my mind has been. And, mm-hmm, and that's lovely for me because it shows that the writers are capable of showing characters can be one thing at one moment and one thing at another, and it mm-hmm all fits into the whole seamlessly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is very different. It's a different perspective from Odo than we've seen in the past.
Right, especially after Kira has said, you know, this is dangerous, not the people on the station. That yeah, should be Odo's concern.
Yeah.
That should hit home. It doesn't, but that should hit home.
Yeah.
All right, next up we see a holding cell where the force field is on, and mm-hmm, our adolescent Jem'Hadar is constantly throwing himself against the force field. He's clearly agitated. Bashir is trying to calm him down, saying that he needs basically a chemical compound to keep him calm, and he's, you know, not listening to Bashir at all. He's still coming in.
Yeah.
I mean, but it is Odo who enters, and the second Odo enters, the second the young Jem'Hadar sees Odo, he's calmer
stops
than
throwing
normal.
Himself
Yeah, he stops
against
throwing.
the force
Exactly.
field.
And Odo even says, like, okay, I'm gonna go. He just turns off the force field. He's like, and he says, come on, let's sit down over here. And talks to the Jem'Hadar, tells him to listen to Bashir, because the Jem'Hadar is basically saying that he feels sick when he eats. He has headaches, he has chest pain, everything. And Bashir says he's going through withdrawal symptoms. He needs a very specific isogenic enzyme, which we will later learn is called Ketracel White, I think. Is that right,
Maybe.
Armin? Yeah.
That sounds right,
So
yeah.
yeah. So it's not named here, but it's definitely something that he needs. He's addicted to it. Odo asks if Bashir can replicate the enzyme. Bashir says he's had a little success with it, but it's just a temporary stopgap measure for what he really needs. And the exact chemical formula, he doesn't have it, but he needs to put this young Jem'Hadar through more tests. But he's been very difficult to sit still. But Odo's the one that says, listen, the doctor is going to help you. Please let him. And that's when our young Jem'Hadar sort of relinquishes the control that he's trying to have and says, fine.
This exchange, when Bashir says, I need to run more tests, the boy says, I don't want any more tests. Then Odo says, Dr. Bashir's trying to help you. You should let him. And the boy says, you may run your tests. It's like immediately he turns. This
Well,
was
because he
funny.
knows it's already genetically imprinted in his genetics to listen to the founder. That's it. The founder
Yeah.
says he agrees immediately.
It also is gonna, it's going to that moment where Odo has a win so quickly. All he says is, you should let the doctor do it. And the boy changes his mind. I think Odo's going to be fooled by this, that he can just continue to, guide the boy, and the boy's just going to do whatever he says. That doesn't turn out to be true.
But Odo, actually, he says, what do you want? Because his whole goal is just try to get into the nitty-gritty of the true desires, the true wants of this young Jem'Hadar. He's, what are your needs? What are your desires? And all he says is, I want to fight. That's it. Because that is what's coursing through his veins. And Odo is trying his best to try to get him away from this aggressive behavior of the Jem'Hadar. And it's just, it's, you know, I mean, I think there's some, the Jem'Hadar is questioning himself because he's young. He's still trying to figure out who he is, I suppose, but he's not buying it so much, I feel.
And if I go one step further for what you just said, Garrett, he does ask him, what is it you want? He says, I want to fight. And then he says, is that wrong? And of course, we would all say, yes, that's wrong. But for his culture, it's not wrong.
It's not wrong. Correct.
It's not wrong. And having played a Ferengi for as long as I did, I came to realize we really need to step outside of ourselves and look at other cultures and not necessarily judge them immediately. And I think that's what this episode is about, not judging people immediately. But think for a second, okay, if that's their culture, how do I deal with that, one? And two, how do I really feel about that? But there's immediate reactions. It's just like the people we saw in the POV shot. Immediate reactions, instinctual reactions. And I found that interesting when he said, is that wrong?
It's also interesting when he says, is that wrong? Odo does not answer that. He doesn't say, no, it isn't. Yes, your instincts are correct. He just says, let's find other interests for you to pursue. You know?
It's about choices. I think Oda's really trying to give him choices.
Let's choose a different choice instead of wanting to fight. There's got to be something else that you're going to find interesting to start, you know, a hobby, anything, just to get you away from this aggression. And he even says, let's try not to be so tense. Take it easy. Smile. He does this
Yeah,
little
what'd you think of the smile bit? It was very funny.
well, because I'm getting ready to do Twelfth Night in Mount Volio has the same bit. It's a joke 400 years old.
It's been
Mount Volio
repeated,
tries
hasn't
to
it?
smile. Yes.
Renee's smile and the boy's
The
awkward
boy smile.
smile.
Oh, I
Like,
laughed
he
my
can't
butt off.
smile. He's
No.
crying.
Well,
It's
because
hilarious.
the boy played it, Bumper played it very interestingly, because he does the smile, and then when he releases it, it's almost like it was the hardest thing for him to do, because he's like, oh, like all this like effort just releases out of the kid. He's like, oh my gosh. So I thought it was a great acting choice on the part of Bumper to make it look like it was such a difficult thing to even make a smile for 5 seconds or even 2 seconds. I love that.
I wonder if that was an actor bit or if it was scripted. I'm
You have the
curious.
original?
I
Look at it.
do, and I want to look at how it ends if they
Look at it.
scripted that joke. So it says, the boy gives him a blank look, and Odo continues, "A smile, you know." And then it says, Odo manages to give the boy his own strained version of a smile. After a beat, the boy attempts to imitate him, and the result is even more strained and forced. The two of them smile awkwardly at each other for a moment. Then Odo breaks. We'll work on that. So yeah, it was scripted. It was a scripted bit.
But his release of that tension is also scripted too, you think?
Yeah. We go to Cisco's quarters next, I think. Marta and Jake are just googly eyeing each other, just about to kiss when Dad walks in. So close.
Oh boy.
Cisco wants to hear all about her life, though. He's very interested in hearing where she comes from, who she is. So she reveals she was an orphan on Bajor. Her parents were killed in the occupation, and that she lived with some neighbors, I think. She does mention a brother and a sister in here, but when she became a Dabo girl, everybody stopped talking to her. Her siblings, the people that raised her. There's a very funny look from Jake in here
When
when she.
Marta says, "It's amazing how some people will judge you based on nothing more than your job." And right when she says that, camera cuts to Jake. Oh God.
He looks at Dad.
S
See?
he's like, "See, Dad?" But it was perfect. The tone and everything that Ciroc Lofton put into that little nonverbal moment. Brilliant. I loved it.
And Avery's response to that look as well is
Yes.
equally as good. And
Yes.
God bless Avery for doing that, of
Yeah.
showing that his character is a little too uptight, maybe.
Yes.
And then I think Jake goes to get some food or something. He leaves them for a moment, and that's when Cisco learns, Marta tells him that that he's an amazing poet. He's an amazing writer, and how much Jake's writing really moves her. She
Yeah.
also mentions he's an awesome domjot hustler. That's when Jake goes to get the dessert after
Yeah, yeah,
that's
yeah. He doesn't
happened.
leave
Yeah.
yet. Yeah.
They talk about that, and then he goes to get the dessert. And at the end of the scene, Sisko realizes there's a lot he doesn't know about his own son.
Yeah, this is all news to him. All news. No clue.
In fact, she says that Mrs. O'Brien suggested that he get his poems published.
Oh,
Pretty
yeah, that's
impressive
right. Yeah.
writer. Impressive
Yeah.
writer.
Yeah.
Yep. I was looking back at the script here, that look from Jake when she says, it's amazing how some people will judge you based on nothing more than your job. The original script says, this scores with Sisko, who looks up at her with a little surprise. Marta has a little more on the ball than he anticipated.
So it doesn't say about Jake
That's
making that
right.
face. So that was Ciroc Lofton doing all that work
Yeah.
there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good job, Ciroc.
Really
Good
good.
job.
Back in the cargo bay, O'Brien is showing Odo the container that may contain this enzyme they're looking for. It looks like a Simon. Remember that game, Simon?
Yes, it does look like a
It
Simon
looks like
game
a Simon
console.
game.
Boop, boop,
Yes.
boop, boop, boop.
Yeah. But he shows him this little container. Odo thinks that they may have kept the Jem'Hadar addicted to this drug to keep them loyal, and he says he'll have Bashir examine it. So, yeah, it looks like they are starting to find some of the things they need to find. I like this part at the end where Odo's talking about the founders getting them addicted to drugs, gives you a great deal of control over them. And O'Brien says, "Wow, that's a pretty cold-blooded thing to do." Odo says, "My people don't even have blood, Chief." So
I
that's
know.
another insight into our changeling. No
Yeah.
blood.
And a difference in cultures and races. Yeah.
Yep.
And good dialogue. Just good dialogue. Good writing.
Back in the infirmary, Bashir's working with this newfound thing that O'Brien found, the
The
medicine,
enzyme.
the enzyme. He's administering a little bit of it. Seems to be working. He's feeling better. And that's when Odo starts to leave. But the boy says, "No, I want to stay with you. I want to stay with you, Odo." Bashir says it's probably fine as long as he can just monitor him regularly. So Odo's got a house guest at the end of this scene.
His
His first
that
one.
really didn't track for me, because if we go back to the conference room, my feeling was the reason Bashir wanted to keep him on the station was to do tests.
Yeah.
And so to say, okay, he can stay with you, monitoring is one thing, but testing is something else. And I think Bashir, for his preference, would be keep him in the infirmary so he can do tests, which is what Starfleet wants to do as well eventually. So.
Yeah, it seemed a little lax in terms of his agenda that, yeah, you're just gonna let him go hang out.
We've seen Odo's room. There's no bed.
Right. Where's he gonna sleep?
Yeah. I mean, I suppose Odo can morph into a bed and he could sleep on Odo.
Yeah, that's true.
Or he can sleep on the sex dungeon
The
equipment. I'm
sex
sure he
dungeon
could, you
equipment,
know.
right.
Well, we go into Odo's quarters. The boy does mention in here that he thinks Odo is very superior to him. He's a founder, so changeling. And Odo takes this opportunity to say, "We're all equal. We're just different. I'm no better or worse than you." Odo admits he's not perfect. He encourages the boy to decide what he wants for himself. And this is where our young Jem'Hadar says he wants to know where he came from, his people. Odo can relate to that. That's what he's been
Right.
wanting for 2.5 years now. And then Odo shows him a video log of the Jem'Hadar fighting on the Defiant. His people are brutal warriors. And Odo says, "You don't have to be like that. Like, I get you want to know who your people are, but you don't have to be like them."
And that you can channel your aggressions in other ways. And
Yeah.
so that's when he asks, how? And next up, we end up in the holosuite. Of course, Odo's all ready to show this young Jem'Hadar that the holosuite is a great place to go to channel your aggressions. So now he runs Odo computer program Odo 1, and a alien appears.
Looks like Tom Morga. Looked like
Yeah.
Tom Morga to me.
Let's just say Tom Morga appears, and of course, Odo explains that this is not a real person. He can't be injured or killed. It's just a computer simulation. Then the Jem'Hadar asks how strong he is. And Odo says, "Well, you can tweak this. You can make him as strong as you want. You can make him as fast as you want. Whatever you need, you can do this. But this is a great way for you to channel all of your aggressions and your violence by coming into this holosuite." So weapons appear, and that weapon that he's using was designed by Dan Curry, and it's sort of like a cleaver. It's almost like a, it was a definitely an interesting shaped knife or cleaver that he's holding, and he starts fighting the holographic character. He wants his opponent to be stronger.
He keeps beating him easily, relatively easily, and he wants it harder, harder, harder. He keeps upping the ante.
He ups the ante. Odo ups it to level 2, and then the boy wants it more difficult. He puts it to 3. Kira comes in and wants a word with Odo, so they leave the Jem'Hadar in the holosuite, where we see him say increase to level 5. So he's having the time of his life at this point.
Armin, was that a holosuite of standing set? Did you have
No.
one? So they'd build that if there was a holo
Yeah.
storyline. Oh,
Yeah. Got it.
interesting.
I don't know
Okay.
where I should know. I don't know where they put it on the set, but yes, it might have been on a different sound stage altogether.
Was it on the one far away, possibly? The far away
Yeah. It could have
located?
been, what
Okay.
is it, 8? Planet Hell was what, 8, 14, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, 14, I think. So.
Because in the story, the holosuites are upstairs. Right.
Correct.
They're,
That's
yeah.
right. That's right.
But you
Right.
wouldn't have built this set up on the second level. You would have
No.
built this, and you could have built it, like you say, even on another stage.
I'm quite sure it was on another stage.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because there wasn't
Sometimes
room.
we do have a room.
In a
If you
corner?
remember the first episode where there was a Bajoran temple. That
Yes.
room often was a utility room, and we would do various things. But I don't think this
Oh.
set that we're looking at in this scene was there.
It
It
was there.
just seems
And
too
that was
big.
right off the promenade, right? The
Yeah,
Bajoran Temple. Yeah.
So it was big enough you could redress it for whatever you needed it to be. Okay.
Yeah.
All
Interesting.
right.
Well, we go into Quark's cafe where Kira has asked Odo to step outside. Kira thinks this is crazy. It's dangerous.
Yeah.
Odo thinks that he can show him he's got choices. And Kira reluctantly agrees, but says, "Be careful. He's still Jem'Hadar." Odo keeps getting the same advice. Sisko said it. Be careful.
Odo is the more conservative character, and here he is really acting with a lot of liberal ideas. The other people have instinctual fear, here's the wrong word, instinctual reactions about the Jem, how to deal with the Jem'Hadar. And Odo's trying to prove those instinctual reactions to be wrong.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it doesn't work.
Well, we go back inside the holosuite, and our young Jem'Hadar is still fighting, full on fighting. Odo says, "Computer and program." And now we cut to them walking on the upper level. Odo walks with the boy. People are still very afraid. The boy sees it. He sees how they're reacting. He said that everybody's afraid of me. They think I'm different. And he says, I could kill any of these people. You know, that's his response. All right, I'll just kill you.
It just sounds like a teenager to me. That's why.
Yeah.
Everything he's saying, teenager.
Yeah. Yeah. But Odo's like, there's so much. So many more choices you have than to kill them.
Yeah.
In the scene between Renee and Odo, Odo has a wonderful speech about, you were a terrorist, Kira.
Oh, right, right, right.
That we make choices, that we can change our path of existence.
Right.
And that's what he believes in. And it doesn't convince her or most of the others that that's possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he just wants to give him a chance is what it is.
Yeah.
And Kira sort of, Kira agrees. Reluctantly, she says, okay, okay, give him a chance. Just don't forget, he is a Jem'Hadar. Yeah.
Yes, if you take a snake into your house, don't be surprised if you get bit.
Exactly.
No. I like how Odo asks the boy in the scene where they're walking. He's like, is that all you can think about? Killing? Isn't there anything else? And the boy's like, I don't think so. Nope, just killing.
Just killing.
Yeah. And then Odo gets a call from Sisko. Sisko says, I need to see you right away, Constable. He takes off, and this deputy is left. You know, there's a background actor left with this Jem'Hadar, which seemed a little sloppy to me.
Yeah, I think you need a couple more people to help out.
Especially since he just admitted to Odo, the security officer, all I think about is killing.
It's killing.
Right, right.
Okay, I'll just leave with the silent guy behind me. I'll just leave you with him.
You saw how the background actor, he does this head thing where he's clearly looking at the Jem'Hadar boy. And he's like that, like, let's go, kind of a thing. And it's like, yeah, really? Like, you're going to do anything to this kid? Yeah.
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 Yep.
I'm only grateful that they didn't take them to Quarks. That's all. I'm only grateful for that.
Well, Odo shows up in the commander's office. Sisko tells Odo that Starfleet's coming for the boy in about 5 hours. Odo's not happy about this.
No, because the original plan was to send him, to take him to Starbase 201. And now they're sending the USS Constellation to come pick him up from DS9. Yeah.
Right now.
Five
hours.
Going
to be here 5 hours. Yep.
One gets the feeling that Sisko was in a pile of doo-doo for having disobeyed Starfleet orders.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But just as this information comes out, suddenly the Jem'Hadar boy, our young boy, unshrouds in his Jem'Hadar way, unshrouds. He's got a weapon in his hand.
Uncloaks.
My assumption
you
was
want to say uncloaks, unshrouds.
I think they call it
shrouding and unshrouding for Jem'Hadar. Then,
okay, yeah, we remember from the first time we've met the Jem'Hadar that they had that
they also
capability.
Shimmered in. Yeah,
so he's learned how to do that. No one has taught him that. He's learned how to
he's
do.
He's learned
that by
how
himself.
To do it on his own. Wait a minute. So it's not a technical device then.
No,
it's
it must
not
be
something they're hitting. It's already in their genetics that they can become like a chameleon and just match the background as. Clearly.
That's what the script is seeming to say. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. He just kind of shimmers in there.
Yep.
He's got a weapon in his hand. So my assumption is that background actor, the security guy, he's
gone.
Out.
Gone.
He's gone.
He's gone over to Voyager now.
Yes. But the boy says, you're not sending me anywhere. I want to run a runabout.
Yeah.
And he says, Odo's coming with him. And Odo does agree in this scene with Sisko there. He says to the boy, Sisko will make sure that nobody tries to stop us because he doesn't want anybody else killed. Odo doesn't want more innocent people, just the one security guy that he sacrificed.
One of his own people can die.
Yeah,
that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's funny because when he says Sisko will see to it that no one interferes with us, he answers, if they do, I'll kill them. So it's more killing. There you go.
Yeah. It's all he thinks about. Well, they're in the corridor. I love this shot that tilted down off the ceiling as Odo and the boy are walking. I just thought that was nice. In fact, I noticed a lot of Avery's shot making in this episode, very different than his first episode. Mm. And he was finding a lot of opening transition things like tilting off the ceiling or coming out of some foreground or.
But different
like
in a
that.
Good way though, Robbie,
in a good
right?
Way, yes.
In a good way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought, and the staging seemed more natural in this episode, the shot making seemed more elegant.
Clearly, Avery is much more comfortable in directing episode 2 than he was in directing the first one.
I think so. I think he naturally just had more experience. Mm-hmm. So.
Talking about Avery's matriculation as a director.
Yeah.
I saw Jonathan West the other day, and I asked him, I said, when did you come on our show? Because I don't remember. And he said season three. So it's possible that some of this is Jonathan West.
I was going to say that. I was going to bring that up,
Interesting.
Robbie, because the first episode Avery directed would have been with
Marvin,
as his DP. And now Jonathan comes in with his different take on things.
My memory of Marvin, too, if you laid out a shot for Marvin, he would do exactly what you said. And that can be a great thing, but if there, he wouldn't often offer
Suggest.
improvements or,
Okay.
yeah, sometimes he would. And sometimes he'd offer a whole different, I'd pitch a shot and he'd be, well, what if we did it the other way? And sometimes that was a great idea, what he had, better than my idea. But Jonathan, I've worked with some DPs who will take your idea, your shot, and they'll say, hey, what if we just add a little of this or a little of that? So they don't change it fundamentally. They just give it a little bit of extra. And that maybe is what I'm feeling with Jonathan
That
West.
he enhanced it
A
just
little
by a
bit
little
without
bit.
changing Avery's,
Concept.
fundamental concept, that he would just add a little opening or a little something. But it's, yeah, definitely felt different. And I didn't even think about that, but the DP change probably had a lot to do with it. The boy says they're in the corner walking. Boy tells Odo, we're going to go to the Gamma Quadrant. And Odo offers to take him away from Starfleet and the Gamma Quadrant. He said, we can be wherever you want to be. You can do whatever you want. But the boy says, I want to be a Jem'Hadar. That's who I want to
I
be.
want to be with my fellow Jem'Hadar. That's what he wants.
He wants to be a Jem'Hadar. That's what he wants.
I love how he says to him, he says, I'm a Jem'Hadar, and that's what I want to be. You're not like these humanoids either, but they've done something to you. They filled your mind with ideas, with these beliefs. I don't know what the other changelings are like, but I know they're not like you. So now he's making this delineation of like, okay, you're like a faulty founder. You're a founder that needs reprogramming, clearly. You're not even seeing straight because to his genetic programming, he already understands what the founder's role in the whole scheme of things. And Odo does not act like a founder.
And again, I would point to that as adolescent behavior. All of a sudden, authority is not perfect authority anymore. Now you're beginning to have a problem with the father figure. And he's not growing any older.
Anymore. Yeah, he's done.
He suddenly stopped growing at 18 or whatever he is. We're outside the airlock where Sisko and his security team beam in. They spread out to find him, but the boy and Odo conveniently run right into Sisko in the spot that he. That was one staging thing I thought, I would have had Sisko head around a corner and run into them in a different shot. It felt convenient.
And if they're looking for Odo, this is what I had a problem with. He's got a
He's got the
communicator.
comm badge on.
Comms badge.
Oh, they would know
They
exactly
would
where
know
he is.
exactly where he is.
Well, they run right into Sisko. Odo asks Sisko to let him go with the boy because the boy could kill maybe innocent people. The boy could get killed himself. And Odo promises that he's going to return once the boy's safe because he believes the boy is not going to hurt a changeling. Even though the boy just previously said, you're not like changelings should be. You're a faulty changeling.
And Odo also says he's protecting the crew of the upcoming Starfleet ship. Which one is it?
The
The
constellation.
Constellation. He's protecting the crew. And indeed, he would be doing that.
And Sisko agrees. Sisko leaves. And the boy says he thinks Sisko was afraid of him. And Odo says, no, he's trying to help you. But the boy says, Sisko is my enemy. And anyone who is not a Jem'Hadar is my enemy. And Odo's very insulted by this as he walks off. He's like, oh, does that include me? As they're walking
He
off.
doesn't answer that.
But it's an interesting choice of staging it this way. And I kind of want to go to the original script. It's an interesting choice because that moment where does that include me? It could have been played very personal and very emotional. And instead, it was played in a wide shot as Odo's kind of taking it more as an insult as he walks off.
More of like a throwaway line as opposed to.
So in the original script, after Sisko leaves, the boy says he was afraid of me. I saw fear in his eyes. And Odo says, Commander Sisko was trying to do what's best for you. He was trying to help the boy. He's not my friend. He's my enemy. I know now anyone who is not Jem'Hadar is my enemy. And Odo's line is, does that include me? And then it says, the teenager just looks at him. We're not sure what he's thinking. The boy turns and walks through the airlock to the runabout. After a beat, Odo follows. So there's definitely a scripted moment that is very interpersonal, very much about character, and there's a moment described here that wasn't really played out in the way it was shot and staged.
So if they had some nice tight close-ups, and it would have been
I think that was a missed opportunity. I agree with the script there. I think that would have been nice to be in tight for Odo asking him,
right?
You know, am I your enemy?
Right.
And the boy not answering.
Yeah.
It'd been nice to see.
Yeah. To see
the performance. On,
yeah. And it was such a wide shot.
Armin, do you think Avery deferred to actors more than your average director? Like if the actors did something, Avery wouldn't question it. He'd defer to their choices.
I can't really answer that question because in the times that he directed me and Max and Nog, Aaron, he didn't defer to it. He told us what he wanted and he would explain it. And then we gave him what he wanted, whether he deferred to Renee or to Nana or to Terry. That's possible, but I, in my experience, he didn't defer to the actors.
Interesting. Okay.
So I have a question. When he told you what he wanted of the Ferengi gang, was there ever a time where you felt like, well, I think Cork should be doing this instead, where you had a different opinion from what he had, where you then expressed that opinion to him, and then you guys had a collaborative debate? Did that ever happen?
Yes, it did, but not until the sixth season.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
In the sixth season, when I get to that episode, I will tell you more about it. But but up until that time, no, he would explain things to us. Avery is a wonderfully poetical speaker. And he would explain things to us, and I would turn to Max after Avery walked away and say, what did he just say?
So true.
It's funny that you say that he didn't defer to you guys in those scenes, because I guess my assumption as I watched some of this and I saw moments where I was like, oh, that's a unusual choice, is that Avery was letting the actors be a little more loose than a typical director. But it sounds like the opposite.
It
sounds like
it might have. My experience was he knew what he wanted. He told us what he wanted, and we did our best to give him what he wanted.
Got it.
It was a dichotomy of when we had an actor director, at least in my experience.
Yeah.
If we had an actor director, the Ferengi tried overly hard to accommodate what they wanted in order to help them out.
Yeah.
But I also know from watching the other actors in the scenes that weren't Ferengi scenes that they would just sort of, oh, yeah, we'll give it to you, Avery, sure. As though he didn't have the authority that normally other directors would have. So it was both of those weaving in and out of the experience.
Interesting. Okay. Well, we do go from that moment that we were just talking about, you know, anyone who's not Jem'Hadar is my enemy. Does that include me? Even more, I feel even stronger that should have been a bigger moment, because the story sort of wraps up now. We go to a space shot with a station log, and the station log is supplemental. Starfleet has expressed disappointment over what it considers a missed opportunity to learn more about the Jem'Hadar. However, I am happy to report that with the boy gone, life on the station has returned to normal. So the story sort of wraps up. That's why I think even more, sorry to harp on this, but that last moment, I feel like should have been that completion. It should have felt more complete rather than, oh, they're just on the run, you know, some more.
I agree with you. Now that you brought that up, the way you brought it up, you're absolutely right.
But would it be in conflict for the moment that's about to happen? Isn't this moment that's about to happen in the scene back on the station, the climactic moment, the very simple statement that Odo makes to Kira?
Oh, the final in the replimat, that one?
Yeah. Well, this last scene, so we get the station log. The last scene is kind of a combo scene because it starts with Jake and Marta walking hand in hand on the lower level. Then as they are heading towards camera, it tilts up to find O'Brien and Sisko watching them walk hand in hand. And I like where Sisko tells O'Brien, never play dom shot with Jake. He's kind of accepting this stuff about his kid that he didn't know.
I also like the way that Avery pronounces
Damjot. He's like, Damjot. Like he does this really very stylized way of saying it. No one else pronounces it that way but Sisko.
And I love the fact that Sisko has learned that his son is more than he thought he was. You know, he's, did you learn about Marta? And he goes, no, but I learned a lot about Jake. I like that moment a great deal.
That is a good moment.
That moment pans off to Odo entering into I guess the
Replimat.
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 Odo walks in to join Kira. He sits down, kind of in silence for a moment. And then he says, Major, about the boy, you were right. And that's where we end the scene.
There we go.
Yeah, it's
All
a
right.
nice opening and closing to this episode. These kind of big shots that I think Avery did in that opening scene where we pan through all of Quark's on the upper level to see the lower level gambling. And now here we're doing panning from the lower level up to the upper level and then back down to the lower level. Yeah, he kind of bookended his episode with some big ambitious shots, which I thought was interesting.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
My lesson of this episode is that you can't convince someone to change if they don't want to. That people are going to do what they want to do, no matter what we say in the end. You know,
That's
can
true.
try to change people, but they're gonna be who they are until they want to change themselves. And the boy didn't want to change. He didn't want what Odo was offering.
Armin, what is your theme moral?
Somewhat the same, just different language. What I wrote is nature versus nurture is one of the oldest questions in philosophy. I don't think it's an either or, but rather to what degree of either can one win over the other? And in fact, in a note to myself, I wrote, much like the Elizabethan idea of humors, that we were made up of four different humors, and too much of one humor would override the other three. So I agree with what Robbie said. It's a question of nature and nurture. And in this episode, as much as Odo is trying to nurture the Jem'Hadar, to try to teach him different ways, in that speech that he says to Kira about, we all make choices, we all changed. But in this case, nature outweighs nurture.
Or you could even say genetically engineered nature.
Genetically modified DNA outweighs
Plays
nurture.
nurture every time, doesn't it?
But it is also what I've said several times today, is the instinctual response to something you don't know, isn't familiar to you, and therefore fear.
It's true.
What about you, Garrett? What's your lesson?
My lesson is, I guess, more about, I think that in our society, a lot of people spend an inordinate amount of time comparing themselves to their neighbors, keeping up with the Joneses. It's always about comparison, comparison, comparison. What do I have? What I don't have? And if people would take the cue of just considering going through life and approaching everyone that you meet or come across, doesn't matter what station they are, whether or not they're a janitor, if they're a school teacher, if they're a bum walking past you asking you for a dollar, that we are all equal. We have to come from that standpoint where we believe that I am equal to the person who is without a home, the homeless person. I am equal to the doctor that has a PhD. We're all equal. We're all human beings. And
Well,
the
Odo
sooner
says
that we
that,
understand
right?
that,
Odo
Odo
says
does.
that in the thing.
He
Like, I'm
does.
no better than you. You're
He
no better
does. He
than
does.
me.
So that's what I'm pulling on. Odo's speech in that one scene. And it's the sooner that we all take on that type of thinking where we're all equal, the better off I think we'll all be as the human race.
Great.
The Patreon poll in terms of lesson, theme, moral of this episode, as submitted by Katie McCarty, is both nature and nurture shape who we become.
Oh, nature and
Oh,
nurture. That's Armin's.
bringing up Armin's. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you everyone for tuning into our recap and discussion of this episode, The Abandoned. Please join us next time when we will be recapping and discussing the episode Civil Defense with Armin yet again. And we want to thank Armin Yay. For joining us for this one. Thank you, Armin.
My pleasure, always.
For all of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material. And of course, we'll have Armin with us as well. So Patreon patrons, I'll see you in a bit. Everyone else, we'll see you next time. See ya.